I think it's good. It's morning. It is morning there in Germany. Are you from Germany?
I'm from Austria. So I welcome you. Yes, I welcome you to the yoga and trauma event, Master Manis Ekaran. Hello. Yes. You are from Malaysia. You are running a yoga academy there for quite some time, a successful yoga academy. And I found that you offer sessions about Urdhvareta. No. And yes, welcome. Maybe you want to add something about you.
Yes, my name is Manis Ekaran, and you can call me Mani. It's easier, I think, to remember to say Mani, easy. And so I actually started yoga when I was a teenager. I was about 13 years old and I started yoga. And in Malaysia, during those days, yoga was not popular. And not many people practice yoga. So I got a book and I started to practice the yoga asanas and the pranayama and the meditation. And I found lots of improvement, but there were no teachers. People were teaching yoga at that time. Then when I was about 17 years old, I came to the city, the capital of Malaysia. And then I started to learn more and I found good teachers to learn. And then after that, my journey continued with a lot of intensive understanding about yoga. And also in Malaysia, we have a multicultural group. We have many people from different cultures and traditions. Therefore, I had an opportunity to learn from different traditions and different cultures for a long period of time. And I did not teach yoga for many years. I was a practitioner from the age of 13 up to 33, which means 13 to about 20 years, 13 to 23, yeah, about 20 years, I just practiced. Just love to practice and understand the feelings of doing yoga, imbibing the benefits of yoga and experiencing the benefits and the restructuring that was happening to me physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. Around the age of 33 plus, then I started to share the knowledge. So my teaching only came after 20 years of practicing. And the 20 years of practicing created a lot of experience and understanding about actually what is this yoga and what is the purpose of yoga and what it is supposed to do for the human body and human consciousness and life itself. Then I started to teach. And as I was teaching, I was also practicing. I practiced and I taught. So over the many years that I was teaching and practicing, yoga evolved to a way which I felt was very comfortable. And then I realized that yoga is a path where you learn from experience and from years and years and hours of practicing and having a very open mind and feeling very intuitive. And therefore, my way of teaching, and I've been teaching for almost about 20 years, and in 2000, and in 2004, I started the Malaysian Yoga Society, which is a society to teach people in our country, in Malaysia, who are marginalized. That means no opportunity to learn, maybe not enough money to pay for the classes. So I started the Malaysian Yoga Society as a karma yoga group. Karma yoga is the art of serving people. So we served the underprivileged or the marginalized community by giving them lessons, free lessons in yoga, no charges. And me and my group of practitioners, my students, went to teach in many places in our country. Then I realized also that there was no structure in teaching. There was no proper yoga instructor course. So in 2007, I started the Malaysian Association of Yoga Instructors. And I started to formulate syllabuses for instructors training. And around 2010, the Malaysian government gave us the certification process. That means all our certificates are registered with the Malaysian Ministry of Education. I don't know what you call that. Maybe you call it the Department of Education. But here we call it as the Ministry of Education, where the level one instructor course, level two, level three, foundation, intermediate and advanced instructor courses are all registered by the in the Ministry of Education. That means it is approved by the government of Malaysia. And then by 2012, we were able to register the Ayurveda therapist course, the Pranayama instructor course, the Dhyana or the meditation instructor course, the yoga therapist course, the pregnancy yoga course. I see that you have a beautiful baby there. Pregnancy yoga course, and also some other courses like the super yoga kits. We also have a program for children where they learn all the beautiful lessons of yoga, more fun like, and they also learn how to read and to write with both hands, and we can work with the two hemispheres of the brain. So this was the evolution. And then in 2020, I started the World Yoga Movement. It's an online yoga movement to create more awareness of yoga. And in the World Yoga Movement, we created a morning practice, about 7 minutes in the morning, 7 minutes in the afternoon, 7 minutes during sunset, like these three practices. And we share with all our friends and community where they can practice every morning. They can practice the 7 minutes. It incorporates some yoga movements, breathing and meditation. Everybody can practice it at any place, in the office, at home, in the schools, in their house, like this. So this is I feel that this is a contribution that I want to make to the world, where everybody is able to learn from yoga. And my way of teaching yoga is that it should be something which is friendly, user-friendly, according to one's capacity. That means you do the yoga exercises according to the body's capacity. Not too much, not too little. If you don't do anything, then the body becomes weak and tired and decays. If you do too much, then there is a wear and strain, wear and tear. So the way we teach yoga is where we go right in the middle, not too much, not too little, but there is a consistent and persistent practice. Basically, this is what I have done. And I started the World Ayurveda Movement and also a cooperative called Mai Cooperative. So my cooperative in Malaysia is one of the four main drivers of the economy. And this is the world's first yoga cooperative for yoga practitioners and yoga instructors. So a lot of work being done in Malaysia to create awareness of the beautiful art of yoga. And also recently, I just came back from India yesterday. I was there for 9 days, and we have an office in India. And I'm also attempting to bring yoga and Ayurveda. Of course, India is where everything started, but I'm also contributing. And I see so many people in India are very interested to hear what I'm saying and are very keen to learn the art of yoga and hatha, the way I have experienced it. This is...
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. That's really a movement you're creating there in Asia. That's amazing. Yeah, we were talking about the topic of this session, and we want to offer Urdhva Rita's yoga, because it's about transforming our gross energy into more subtle, into more fine energy. And Urdhva means upwards flow, and Rita's means the fine energy. And that's a very special practice also you offer. I haven't seen it actually in any other yoga academy. I've nowhere actually.
Mm. So this Urdhva Retas is a very interesting and special technique, which originated from the Siddhas of South India, and they have written about it. They have spoken about it. They have many people who have approached it in many ways. It was it's about 5 to 7,000 years old, but I believe it is much more older than that, where they believe that the entire body can be restructured, the cells can be enhanced and made stronger without any form of special consideration of some herbs or some other very intensive methods of exercising. That means it's not a big intense sadhana of retiring yourself to the caves or the monastery or leaving the family or becoming like a renunciate. Without all of that, they have given a philosophy, a practice, some techniques where a person like you and me can be in the city, can be with the family, can get married, have children, or doesn't matter if you don't marry, but you're taking care of your siblings, your parents, and means you are with society. Now this understanding is very important because otherwise in Asia specifically, I'm not so sure about Europe, but in Asia, people for a long period of time, people think that in order to attain the highest levels of self-realization or to attain a very spectacular health, you need to stay away from society, that you need to detach and then you have to move to a monastery or a forest or a cave and then leave the family and all that. So this is a misunderstanding. I believe so from my own life because prior to some of the misunderstandings, I also had this thinking that it is like that. But then reading deeply into the history of yogis and rishis, I found that many of the kings were also very high-level practitioners. Like, for example, Janaka. And when King Janaka was pointed out to Arjuna by Krishna, saying that this is one of the highest realized souls. But then we look at Janaka. Janaka is not a person who has left the society or who has renounced. He is a king, and he is taking care of the people, and he has his family, his wife, his children. So in the thick of activities, he is self-realized. I think this is the story of Urdhva Retas. Urdhva Retas is an art where within a short period of time, maybe about 10 minutes or 15 minutes, you learn the technique and then you practice it, maybe in the morning a little bit, in the afternoon a little bit, in the evening a little bit, and you get that kind of an energy and that stability and the centeredness, which is the hallmark of yoga. Yoga is a practice where it gives you centeredness. What is good? What is wrong? What is right? What is wrong? People are confused about this. This whole world seems to be very confused about what is right, what is wrong. Urdhva Retas, because the word Urdhva means moving up. Moving up in what? Moving up in consciousness. Our mind expands, though in yoga, the main word is moksha. Moksha means freedom, right? Liberation. But liberation and freedom without responsibility has also created lots of chaos. Lots of people feel that I have the right to do anything and everything, and have almost like damaged themselves through experimenting with some things which should not be experimented with in the name of freedom and liberation. Yoga celebrates freedom and liberation. That's the word Urdhva. Urdhva means moving up, evolving, finding the truth, finding the light, finding the answers to all our questions. But can it be done in a very safe way? Without any substance abuse, and not saying that I have the freedom and I can do anything, but not acting in responsibility. So side by side with freedom, there must be responsibility. The responsibility is what? To make sure that I am moving in a way where my health of my mind, my body, and my emotions are also kind of in a state of balance, and also to the people around me that I'm doing my best to for them. So this particular practice allows us to attain a state of centeredness, a state of balance. At the same time, can I do yoga asanas? Of course, you can do yoga asanas. I teach yoga asanas to instructors. Can we do breathing practices? Go ahead. Can we do detox? Can we go swimming? Can we go cycling? Can we go to a picnic with the family? Can we go to a movie? All of these things can be done. But would I want to... Now, if I'm... let's say someone is looking for some kind of ecstasy. Through the Urdhvaretas practice, I will be able to feel greater happiness and a kind of a permeating joy and ecstasy in my mind, in my body, where I don't have to take some kind of intoxication. I don't have to take some kind of substances which eventually will damage me. So the concept of Urdhvaretas is natural, not even, you know, looking for some special herbs, some special concoction. People travel to many places in the world looking for some special concoction where they take and then they feel that there is some kind of freedom that they achieve from inside, or take something to smoke or something like that, which I'm not criticizing, but I'm just saying that the difference here is that this practice allows you to experience that which is supposed to bring kind of a elevation and ecstasy without anything external. No herbs, no special diet, no concoction, not even the ability to do some very difficult asanas or holding the breath for hours or to be buried underground. None of this, and not even spending hours trying to meditate and trying to dive deep inside, not finding anything. Or some, you know, that kind, that is discounted. This is a huge discount. This Urdhvaretas is a huge discount in the busy lives that we lead, where we have to take care of our children, we have to take care of our families, societies, and all that. So this is Urdhvaretas. It came from the alchemist of South India who shared about how this very beautiful technique, simple techniques, can restructure and redevelop our health and vitality. So that is Urdhva. Urdhva, moving up, retas, the finest energy which we can harness. We have some very gross energies. Even emotion is a energy. What I'm speaking now is an energy. The way my movements are is energy. For you to listen is an energy. All of this is energy. But can we tap through the practices a more refined energy, or can we create another form of refined energy? This is how this particular technique has come by. Now, the source of energy, according to yogic tradition, lies in the pelvic floor muscles. And most of you would have been exposed to Mulabandha or some kind of exercise in the pelvic region, right? Pelvic region. And some of the schools have thought about the soft contraction. Now let's look at the technique in Urdhvaretas, where the fundamental of the practice, the source of the practice, the source of energy and rejuvenation starts from the pelvic floor muscles. And there are three components there. One is Vajroli. Vajroli is in the frontal passage, where it is almost akin to the sensation of urinating. And then let's say a person is urinating and this baby is urinating, this 3-year-old boy is urinating, and mother calls, Joseph, come here. And while urinating, he stops. He stops the process of urinating because mommy is calling. That control of the process of urinating, the group of muscles which he is using to stop the urination, in yoga is called Vajroli. And then the boy says, mommy, I am urinating. The mommy says, okay, right, continue, Joseph. And Joseph releases the muscle, and the urine continues. This ability to to control and stop, not while urinating, but the group of muscles that has this capacity in yoga is called Vajroli. So, and it is done in a soft way. So coming to the technique of attaining the management and control and mastery over the source of energy at the pelvic floor muscles, we need to look at the three concepts of yoga from this point. One is Vajroli, which I have described to you just now. Are there any questions here about Vajroli?
Well, there are a lot of questions. One moment. There are a lot of questions about Vajroli, actually. Because it's the energy sucking technique, and there is, for example, said that if a man sucks with the Vajroli energy, practice the energy of a woman, he's draining her. You know what I mean? That he's taking energy from someone else. There are a lot of interesting things about Vajroli. It's a good technique, but at the same time, there are some cons, as I read it. Yeah.
Okay. What's your name, please?
I'm Ingrid.
Ingrid. Now, Ingrid, I think there are some schools, the schools of yoga. The one is the Vama, the left hand, and then Dakshina, the right, and then the Madhyama, correct? In the context of Urdhvaretas, it is own self. It is not with a woman or a man, but this Vajroli is within, by oneself, individually, not in contact with another person or another partner. It's not, it's by oneself. So this Vajroli is in the context of this practice. Now, in the context of practicing with the partner, in the context of attempting to suck another person's energy, this is theory and also speculation. It's a theory and a speculation, because when you talk about the muscles that control the urination, the urination and the stopping of the urination, the person is urinating, stops. It stops. Whatever urine that has been released, it is out. It doesn't come back. Then when it is released, the urine flows out. So this Vajroli is not to suck, but to manage whatever that is inside. To think about that it is able to suck energy from outside, technically in the traditional context or even in modern scientific context, it may not be actually part of what this technique, this training is. So, I've also heard about some people who think that it's the potential of sucking something inside, but it is not that which Vajroli. Vajroli's concept is just stopping from wastage, stopping. And one of the outlets of the body's energy, apart from the eyes, nose, ears, mouth, and the urinary passage and the anus passage, the concept is to stop, not to suck in. For example, if I want to do Yoni Mudra, I am just stopping the energy from being released, correct? It is not that by doing this, I am able to suck in the energy from the external noise, that we already have enough energy and power in the body and we don't want to release it. Therefore, we stop. So Vajroli is a process of stopping and not acting in a parasitic way to pull in. Yoga is an art of giving. Yoga is an art of sharing. At no point in any of the practices where there is a potential of draining somebody's energy, Ingrid.
Okay, thank you for clarifying this, because that's what I read a lot in the tantric practices when you talk about Vajroli Mudra and you're in intercourse, that the upward drive of the energy becomes so strong that you start taking energy from your partner. But if you say it's just a stop function of this practice, then I'm happy about that, actually, to hear another side, the whole practice. Yes,
yeah.
Thank you.
Most welcome. So it's just a matter of clarification that in all the practices of yoga, in the tradition of Tantra as well as tradition of Hatha, that the art is isolated to oneself, and that by practicing, one's own energy is enhanced. And in fact, whoever is around them, they have the opportunity to experience some form of sharing and not some kind of taking away. It's giving. Yoga is based on giving, the art of giving, and none of the practices would actually enhance any form of taking away. So that is Vajroli.
Yeah.
Then from there, any other questions you have about Vajroli before we go to Moolabandha?
No, I'm good. Thank you.
So from Vajroli, you have the other component. You have three practices in the pelvic region. One is Vajroli, another one is Moolabandha and Ashwini Mudra. Now, the second one, which is easier to understand, is this is the urinary passage, Vajroli, and this is where the anus is. Now, from the anus, the ability to stop and release the bowel movements is at the mastery of the anus. So the contraction of the anus is Ashwini, and releasing of the anus is the second part of Ashwini, contract and release. The same contraction that we have for Vajroli is done here at Ashwini. And in the practice at the region of the pelvic floor, it is done at the very softest level. None of the practices in yoga should be based on himsa. And you know this ahimsa, right? Ahimsa means non-violent, not aggressively. None of the practices in Hatha yoga or Tantra, anything to do with the mind, anything to do with the breath, anything to do with the body, should be approached in an aggressive way. It should be approached in a moderate way. Not too soft where you can hardly feel anything, or not too hard where you feel too much of pain or some kind of strain, but in such a moderate way, moderate level, where you feel just comfortable. Sthiram and Sukham, you feel comfortable. You feel so comfortable that you can be steady. That physically you can remain steady, the breath can become steady, the mind can become steady and relaxed. So this sthiram, being steady and being relaxed. So this is another component of the practice of Urdhvaretas, where Ashwini Mudra is also slowly and gently mastered. But one thing is, which is very important, is that the contractions are done soft and not connected with the breath. We do not combine the practices of Vajroli, Sahajoli, for ladies, Sahajoli, Vajroli for men, the Moolabandha practices, nor the Ashwini Mudras associated with the breath. It is just independently done and done in a very soft way and not combined. Vajroli is not combined with Ashwini, and Ashwini is not combined with Moolabandha. All three we learn to isolate. And in the practice of Urdhvaretas, the first step is to be able to understand these three and learning to isolate. When we learn to isolate, then the Urdhvaretas practice becomes enhanced. So then this is Ashwini, the contraction, soft and consistent contraction, not so many times, but for a short period of time, maybe 5 or 10 times. And then the third component is in the middle, Moolabandha. And Moolabandha is where the Mooladhara Chakra is, right? And since I think all of you are yoga practitioners and you must have practiced or heard about this, Mooladhara is at, for men, is at the perineum. for ladies is at the posterior of the cervix. And for men, it is more, much more easier because it is more physical and they're able to contract. But when they contract, Vajroli and Ashwini must be managed. Vajroli must not happen, Ashwini must not happen. It is just isolated at the perineum. For ladies, at the posterior of the cervix, it is more of a more mental control of feeling that the posterior of the cervix is in a state of contraction and release. When they do this, Vajroli and Ashwini must be minimized. And at one point, most probably like the mastery level is such that when someone does Vajroli, none of the two is activated. Mula Bandha, none of the other two is activated. Ashwini, none of the two is activated. When they do Vajroli, the lower abdomen is not in contraction. So it's a very, very strong mastery and efficiency over the management of the pelvic floor muscles, which is the source of this extraordinary energy. Once that is done, then the second component is moving the energy that is generated via these practices to the Swadhisthana Chakra, which is at the tailbone. So that the gross energy becomes the finer energy. The gross energy is now moved to the finer energy. That means there is a metamorphosis, there is a transmutation from gross to retas. As I mentioned just now, also Ingrid mentioned about this retas, which is the refined energy. How does it happen? When we do this, when we have mastered these three, the isolation of these three techniques, and when we practice it according to the tradition and the techniques offered in Urdhva Retas, then during that time, the gross energy is transmuted, the gross becomes subtle and slowly evaporates to the Swadhisthana Chakra at the tailbone. And then from there, it is made to flow up the spinal cord through the channels, the Ida, Pingala, and the Sushumna going up, and then starts to ventilate and saturate and expand the energy in the brain. So this technique kind of like gives energy and support to the functions of the brain. Why should we give energy to the functions of the brain? I will explain to you in a while. So I will stop here for a while and then see whether you have any questions about these two which I have mentioned.
Yes, to separate all these muscles, that needs time. And it's sometimes not so easy, actually, also. So how long do people need to practice this till they really feel that they can separate the muscles?
How long is subjective to how much the person can commit. But first of all, Ingrid, is the clarity of understanding. That means they are very clear theoretically. Mm-hmm. The theory is very clear. And once the theory is very clear, and then after through thorough discussion about the isolation, the process, the technique, the technology, then one starts to practice. How long and how much? And basically, I believe that through my own experience, if they can set aside maybe about 5 minutes a day, maybe two times a day, 5 minutes, 5 minutes to understand and to master this, within maybe in a month, maybe in 30 days, they would be able to have good mastery over the practice. Now, again, recapping, first the theoretical understanding, and then the more question and answers on from a very perspective of drawing, and then discussion, drawing, explaining from charts and all that. Then the refinement and going back and practicing and then coming back and then going through the coaching process. So I think within 1 month, one should be able to understand, isolate, and have a basic mastery over the three techniques. Then over a period of time, they would be able to further isolate. The 30 days would be to understand, to feel and experience. And then after that, maybe it takes about 3 months to properly isolate the three categories. And provided the person is practicing 2 or 3 times a day, 5 minutes each time, Ingrid.
Okay. So there is... there is then a further enhancement after isolating those muscles?
The first there is a basic, and then there is an intermediate, and there is an advanced. So in yoga, you always have this, most of the time you have the basic, intermediate, advanced. So what I'm explaining to you is the basics. Once the basics have been mastered and structured, then by himself or herself, the practitioner would bring out the right questions. After some time of practicing, when I'm speaking to the practitioner and after they have practiced over a period of time, then they would ask a question which I would realize that they have practiced and this question has come into their mind. And for now, in a very theoretical manner, for the sake of discussion, yes, there are further practices once one has isolated and understood these three concepts, these three practices.
Okay, thank you. I think I need to hand over the session to he needs some mommy time. I'm sorry. Is that okay for you if Karina continues the session with you?
Yeah, definitely.
Yes. And I will watch the whole session later when I still have the recording on. Okay. Karin, is this okay for thee?
Yeah.
So who's this now?
Hello, I'm Karina. I'm taking over.
Karina.
Yeah.
Okay, Karina. Now, I've basically explained the foundation of the Urdhva Aretas practice and that the Urdhva Aretas practice is a practice of restructuring our physical body to have an enhanced state of good health, vitality, not only physically, but also energy-wise and mentally and emotionally. Because energy should not only be enhanced physically, but energy should also be enhanced emotionally and mentally, so that when we are going into the society, we are able to manage ourselves better and remain stable and also clear in what we are going to do. So in that sense, we will not be violent. We will not be aggressive, too aggressive, and we will not be in a way where we are disturbing other people's peace and harmony. So this is what, at the practical level, Urdhva Aretas does. And it is not a mental practice. It is a physical practice. It's a practice where you actually do the techniques, you do the physical movements, you do the breathing movements, you master the art of understanding Vajroli, Mola Bandha, and Ashwini Mudra, and some very simple pranayamas or breathing techniques, and some visualizations, and you actually feel the movement of the energy upward. Now, when the energy moves upward, Karina, right? Karina?
Yeah.
Okay. When the energy moves upward, Karina, people think that sometimes the energy is uncontrollable and it is like too much. It is not so in this particular technique. In fact, I believe that all techniques of yoga do not release energies which are uncontrollable. Mm-hmm. When we practice in the way that yoga is supposed to be practiced, then yoga is supposed to bring about harmony. It is supposed to bring about a state of balance of the yin and yang, Ida and Pingala, right? It's supposed to make you a very balanced person. Now, and then when you hear about yoga and then you say, oh, this person has some injury, or this person has some kind of relapse or some kind of explosion where they start to see something so remarkable that they cannot handle it and they become like, you know, very confused, or things that are associated. Now, Urdhvaretas is associated with Kundalini, right? I'm sure we have heard this, the word Kundalini, na? The word Kunda. Kunda is at the pelvic floor, the pit, right? Which I've explained just now. The three components of our practice is at the Kunda, at the pit. Kundalini, what is this word Kundalini? Many people have said that this is a very spectacular energy, it is a supernatural energy and whatnot. But from my own experience and practice and understanding, the word Kundalini means a creative force, a creative energy. Now, when a creative force like Urdhvaretas is flowing up, it's not different from the energy of Kundalini. It's just another word for Kundalini. But Urdhvaretas is a much more swifter and shorter a method of awakening this energy in small quantums. You start with small quantums, and as the body and the mind is ready to receive a higher quantum, then it is gently and generally released. Now, the word Kundalini means creative energy. Mm-hmm. Now, Karina, yeah. How would a person who is creative and balanced be? What would the personality of a person who is experiencing a creative state of mind, but at the same time in a state of balance?
Mm-hmm. I would expect him or her to be calm, more being within themselves instead of being outside, and maybe unaffected from the stresses from my surroundings. Maybe thinking more clearly, something like that.
Yeah, I think you have described it very beautifully. And to put the perspectives in a different perspective that you have mentioned, external and internal balance. That it is not wrong to be extroverted, nor is it not wrong to be introverted, not wrong at all. But the awakening of this creative force would make a person balanced externally and internally, that they would be able to go to society and be happy and be able to contribute with the members of the society. At the same time, when they go back home or to their room, they would be happy to be with themselves. So this is the balance of this creative force. And a person who has awakened this soft creative energy, would they also be a happy person? I believe so, because the mind is constantly experiencing something new. The word creativity means something new, correct? And if this energy is perpetually being released, meaning that the person who is experiencing this is perpetually experiencing something new all the time, internally, perpetually, infinitely, some beautiful force in a soft way is arranging and rearranging through various combinations and permutations of energy within oneself, where there is a perpetual soft joy from within, which allows the person not needing to use their willpower or some kind of affirmation, need to remind themselves to affirm or to read or to listen or to hear someone all the time to remind themselves, not necessarily, because this is a real energy, a real experience, which is perpetually in a soft way being released from inside, where one is naturally able to keep oneself almost at a very steady state. I mentioned the word almost because the pursuit of yoga and these practices is not perfection. We make mistakes. It's fine to make mistakes. But the learning process is so fast that the next moment when it comes and this particular situation comes back, then the chances of making the same mistake is reduced to a very significant level. And if it happens, it is not of the magnitude that happened before because of the creative process. So creativity means if it is not repeated again and again, then it is creative. If one is experiencing a new way of thinking and feeling all the time, then that is creative. A creative state should not be once in a while, once in a blue moon, because that happens because of the generation of energy is not there. But in Urdhvaretas, we practice 5 minutes in the morning. There are five practices in Urdhvaretas in the morning, three or four practices in the sunset is evening, and then night there's one practice. So three times we practice this Urdhvaretas and we channel the energy. The energy is channeled and it is just generated from inside, where you have a perennial source of energy enhancing the functionings of the brain. And you mentioned just now, clarity of thinking. This is so absolutely important to have a clear-headedness. Now, in the midst of chaotic life, family, just now Ingrid had to go because she has to handle the child and then handle this workshop. And then after that, must handle the husband, the in-laws, the family, society, so many things. Where would we have the other energy, another source of energy to think about self-realization? So here in Urdhvaretas, the significance of this energy in the brain centers is such that we are able to handle the necessities of life, handle family, children, in-laws, wife, husband, a fiance, girlfriend, boyfriend, society, bosses, subordinates, students, all we are able to handle and work. But there is a source of energy inside where one compartment of the brain can think about, reflect the philosophy of life, that one is moving towards self-realization almost all the time, all waking time, sleeping time. Some form of evolution is taking place consciously and at the subconscious level, at the unconscious level, almost perpetually all the time. At the same time, life is being handled. So these two traveling side by side. Whereas in many people's attempt to understand yoga, it's only during practice that I have this extraordinary energy. And then once I'm out of the mat, or out of the room, out of the monastery, out of the ashram, come back to Australia, come back to Malaysia, then I am overwhelmed. Oh my God, so much of stress. Oh, I'm thinking, when will I be going to the monastery? When I will be going to the ashram? When I will be going to practice? When am I? Oh, I must go to my yoga class to...
Mm-hmm. So you will, be able to hold that calm, peaceful energy you are within the practice once you leave the practice and go back to normal life.
Yeah. When you leave the practice to go back to normal life, the practice stays here. It should not. The practice should flow into life, and that not only flowing in life itself after some time should be full of this feeling of that everything that I do, that the movements that I make in my daily life is some kind of asana, that I'm conscious of my breath, I'm interacting and becomes pranayama, that my mind is in such a state that even though I'm doing my work and all that, it is in a state of meditation or dhyana. Why? Because there is a constant and perpetual supply of this infinite energy continuously streaming in this finite body, the infinite within the finite and experiencing it. The total sum structure, total substructure, and the total structure of yoga is to bring this. Despite the world having access to so many yoga practices, yoga courses, self-development courses, meditation, retreat, detox, and all of this, why is it that the perpetuality of this seems to be missing? That everybody is just looking forward to again another retreat, another class, and all that. No? So what I'm articulating and what my my sharing and my teaching to my students here in Malaysia and also those who come to learn is that let this practice be part and parcel of your everyday life, and there are techniques which allow us to experience it. Part of it is urdhvaretas. The other practices like manipuraka, where the body starts to engage in some mudras and asanas, and also some of the other practices like pranayama and all that. But very important is the clarity of what we think yoga is and what we need to understand about the original context of yoga in our daily lives. That we cannot depend on an isolated practice. It should be part and parcel of an entire process of understanding. Now, in urdhvaretas, a very important concept is to relate to the way we breathe. I tell my students that in between some work, in between your chores, household and all that, take a deep breath in. And I don't tell them take the breath in like this. I don't tell them, because the moment is very stressful, no? Like the pectoris is not able to expand. I say, hey, just do this. Inhale and then raise your arms. Inhale, look up and feel connected with the breath. And then exhale down, feel calm and relaxed. And again, one more time, breathing in, oxygenating and breathing out. Pranayama is a very good, a very important is connected with urdhvaretas, the way to breathe properly, the way to breathe in a way which is longer and deeper, and to be aware of the pauses. Can it be done at other times during work? Of course, we can observe the breath. Can we observe the breath and find some form of clarity and understanding of what it is? Definitely, yes, we can do that. Now, another practice which is associated with urdhvaretas is the slight contraction of the abdomen, Uddiyana Bandha. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the things that I have observed in the world today is the aggressiveness of the practice. For example, Karina, when we talk about Kapalabhati, we see in the YouTube and all that, Kapalabhati is done like this. Mm-hmm. No, it is done like that. And then sometimes they are using the hand. Or very, very explosive, like this. But yoga talks about sthiram and sukham, steady and comfortable. So can we do Kapalabhati like this? Softer.
Yeah.
And at the end of this Kapalabhati, I did Kapalabhati to you just now.
Yeah.
Now I'm doing. If I want to do slightly faster, 0.5 seconds. Is there a contraction? Soft. Mm-hmm. If I don't want to do the contraction, fine. Yeah. If a lady is pregnant or during menstruation or a person is having hernia and all that, then no need to move, but still can do. Mm-hmm. At the end of this practice, at the end of this soft approach to Kapalabhati or Bhastrika, what do I feel? I feel centered. If I do, I feel aggressive. I feel I want to go, you know, fight with somebody because my everything is agitated. And then let's look at Bhastrika.
Yeah. So you can still have the benefit without being overly aggressive with the practice.
That's it. Bhastrika.
Mm-hmm.
So many times I can do, but is it the numbers that is important? It's not the numbers. It's not 120 or 1200. It's how I feel as I do.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes subtle and subtle. At the end of it, at the end of this, almost like not breathing, almost.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the atmospheric pressure and the body's pressure is so balanced that I don't feel like I'm not breathing. Most probably I'm breathing. I'm not bringing supernatural kind of explanations here where, oh, you stop breathing, you can bury it underground or under the sea. I mean, we are not interested in that. But what we are interested is, can the mind become so calm after Kapalabhati and Bhastrika? If the approach is this way, then it is part of what we call as Urdhwaretas. Urdhwaretas is a specialized technique. Yes, it's a specialized technique. But as I promised to Sumi that I will share some of the methods here. And the main thing I have not, because it's a course, and I think you have spoken about it. But some of the other things that I want to bring here is that yoga's approach is comfortable. And then after I have done, let's say, 20 Kapalabhati or Bhastrika, should I immediately do the next one? Is it the race? Then after I have done, then I continue. Then I wait for 5 seconds. And then 5 seconds. It's not a race. We are not here for a race. We want to do maybe a short round, about 20. And then we want to enjoy the effect of that practice. I want to feel, I want to enjoy. This is retas. This is the finer energy that has been generated. There is no rush. There is no hurry. There is no need to do the next thing, the next action. Let's wait for the inaction and be aware of that state, enjoy that state. And if I feel I need to do, I do. If I don't feel I need to, because I have tapped into that source, into that creative source, I feel, I have achieved, I have this soft feeling and I want to keep it. I want to keep it and I want to go with this feeling. And when Ingrid holds the baby, she feels, I feel so beautiful inside, and this is a beautiful experience. No stress from the baby, but just such beautiful connection. And will the baby feel that calmness? Of course. Whoever around us feel the calmness that we emanate. If yoga practice is so aggressive and so much of competition and want to just, you know, move the muscles and build, then I don't see that it is part of what traditional yoga is all about. Traditional yoga is about what we can do. Now, in this practice, for example, we want to do a stretch. In Urdhwaretas, there are stretches. The stretches that bring about the flow of energy. Now, I want to do Paschimottanasana. I go according to my capacity. How I want to do is according to my capacity, correct? And I honor myself. I love myself. I want to protect myself. And I don't want to be in competition with someone. And the instructor says, let's do Ardha Bada Padma Paschimottanasana. Half lotus, right? Half lotus, bound, forward bending. Mm-hmm. I say this is what the instructor wants us to do. Half lotus, bound, forward bending. This is competitive approach. Now, I want to talk to you about the approach of how an Urdhwaretas yogi would approach it. He would first sit in Dandasana, he or she, and then I would say, check the potential of Ardha Padmasana. If there's any strain on the knee or the hips, then keep the leg down. Refined. Okay, I made a mistake. Then the Bandha, the lock, I just hold my waist. And if this feels comfortable, but this is uncomfortable, I'm not in a race, I'm not training for the Olympics, therefore I can just hold like that. Then the instructor says, hold the big toe. Now when I go forward and I hold the big toe, there is some strain on the hamstring, strain on the back. I don't have to hold the big toe. I can hold my ankle. I can hold my ankle. And then the instructor says, bring the forehead to the knee. And I'm attempting to go to the knee and there is pain. Where can there be a refined energy or refined emotion or a good feeling when there is pain? Yeah. Cannot be. Therefore, what I do is a stretch, Karina, is supposed to bring pleasure, right? When I stretch, when I get up in the morning, you know, those days we had time that when we got up from the bed, we did the stretch. Mm-hmm. And then we did this and we stretched like that. Those days, we had time when we got up from sleep to stretch. And did that stretch, those stretches bring pleasure? It is supposed to bring pleasure. And yoga is supposed to do that. So here I am, and here, I hold both legs like this. I mean, both hands I hold. And now, in yoga class, you find people attempting to do this.
Yeah.
Wanting to go down and break some bones and some records. That's not the concept of yoga. Is where I want to hold. Now I'm holding here. And then we hold and we engage. The muscles of the bicep and tricep are able to work in a more not susceptible to injury as much as the lower back, correct? Mm-hmm. So now I engage my arms and I stretch. I relax. Two things are happening. I relax and engage. I relax and engage. Engage the muscles which are safer to engage, and relax the muscles which are in need of protection. This and hamstring prone to injury. Hamstring and the lower back prone to injury. So therefore, I relax this, use my arm strength, relax my head, engage my arms. The only muscles I'm engaging are my bicep, tricep, deltoid, trapezius. Mm-hmm. And there is a kneecap contraction. The quadriceps I engage softly, and I use my arm strength. And here I learn to relax my abdomen, learn to relax different parts of the body, and I relax and I relax and relax. Not necessarily I relax because I want to relax so that I can touch the knee. That is not the refined movement in my head and my mind. I want to enjoy this moment. And I'm focused on my breath. I am in awareness of my body, the musculoskeletal structure, my breath, my internal organs, and I'm in contact with the asana. Therefore, the asana becomes a source of evolution. It's a state which allows me to attain a greater clarity. And therefore, we say this is part of the big practice of Urdhvaretas. That is the reason why in Urdhvaretas, as I mentioned, the 5-minute practice in the morning, 5 minutes practice in the evening, and 2 minutes practice at night does involve a very soft number of asanas together with one or two type of breathing and the other subtle techniques. So, but the overall concept is we can learn. Like after adjustment, we have to learn yoga in the full context, Karina. It's not only Urdhvaretas, it's not only Manipuraka yoga, it's not only Hatha yoga, it's not only Tantra yoga, not only that, not only Dhyana or Pranayama, but in the context, the overall context is that the refinement of energy is how we approach yoga. Yoga is becoming very popular. I understand that very much. And because of its popularity, there are many, many attempts to bring many, many different styles. This, we say, is the celebration of diversity, correct? The celebration of diversity. Now, my question is, if the will is working, why do we need to modify something which has been working for 10,000 years? There is one art which has been working for 10,000 years. And the practitioner enters that art as it is. I enter the art as it is. And it takes me 40 years to understand that one art. And then it becomes alive in me. That one original art given by the rishis and the yogis and the siddhas never been modified, because this is Hatha yoga and it is as it is. This is the pranayama, this is the meditation as it is. And I capture the essence of it. We capture the essence of it, we practice, we imbibe, and it takes us 30 or 40 years to even understand this. And then yet what we have allowed is that we have allowed us not to do this, but to take this and not understand it, and then break it into many components and attempt to practice. And the legendary benefits, the legendary components, the components of yoga and its benefits, which have been written down in Hatha Yoga Pradipika, Hatha Ratnavali, Shiva Samhita, all so many of these has written about the benefits, are missing in modern practice. Something is telling us that something is wrong. Very easy, I can tell you the answer is that the original, because people feel, you know, there needs to be some kind of diversity. And then, but what I have mentioned to you is so easy to get back to the original, because the original has two things. That is, one is theorem, it is to bring stability, and sukham, it makes you happy and joyful from within. It doesn't need something external, it is inside. That's the reason why when you practice the asanas, when you practice the pranayama, it is a very moderate practice. Even the asanas which I showed you is it's a kind of a moderate practice. It depends on the practitioner. There are many practices for beginners. For example, a beginner can start like this, breathing in, and then stretch the fingers. Breathing out, thumbs inside, press hard, improving grip strength. Many people don't have grip strength, but it's connected with the breath. Breathe out, wait for a while. Inhale and then stretch the fingers and then breathe out. Press hard. Coordinate with the breath. So many people have problems with stagnation of fluid here and then so much of pain, arthritis of the toes and all that. Simple practice. Inhale, stretch the toes, wait for a while. Exhale and stretch the toes towards the body. Inhale, stretch the toes forward. Wait for a while. Exhale and stretch the toes towards the body. As simple as that, coordinate with the breath. As you saw just now, there were four aspects which I did. Inhale, one. Hold the breath, two. Exhale, three. Hold the breath, four. Only according to capacity. I'm not counting one, two, three, four, five. No, it is according to your capacity. Then we want to, and everybody is so inclined to exercise the muscles. Why not? We can do so simple exercise like this. This is called knee bending, Janu Chakra. Janu Naman, exhale. Compression of the abdomen takes place. Inhale slowly, exercising the knee, quadricep, abdomen, lower back. If I need to support, definitely I can support. I don't have to do something which is extraordinary. I can support, hold it for a while, and then breathing out, exercising the knee, hip, and the abdomen, good squeeze, and then inhale, and then hold, and then straighten the back, and wait for a while. All ages, senior citizens, everybody can do this. But over a period of time, do we have asanas which is also like advanced? Yeah, okay. Now, let's say I'm speaking to somebody who is highly competitive and who wants to do some kind of an aggressive asana. I will tell him that we can approach a more advanced asana in a soft way according to capacity. So like this, let's say a side bakasana. So I will tell him or her, you go like this, and then you go to the side and do it. So I'll tell my students, if you are happy, you can just wait there. No more than this. You're exercising arms, legs, and all that, and then go back and relax. For those who are in need of something more and they have been training for some time, then I say be aware and be happy in doing it, not as a performance, but you are truly happy to do this. Inhale and hold the breath, and then you stretch. And then you come up, not wanting to do the next asana, but the moment you do that, you lie down and enjoy that moment, that feeling. Relax. Take a deep breath in, breathing in, oxygenating, and breathing out. One more time, breathing in, oxygenating, and breathe out. No hurry. Stabilize. Everything is beautiful. You feel so connected with yourself. roll over to the side, and then move to the next. So you can see that this whole concept of refinement is how we approach almost everything that we do in yoga. And when we do this here on the mat, then I believe that when we go out there to society, to our family, to work, this very individualistic, very calm, steady, yet dynamic. We don't want people to say that, oh, yoga practitioners, not dynamic. They are just, you know, lonely, alone, self-absorbed. No, we want them to say they are also people who can communicate, who can go with people. Of course, we kind of like don't have to engage in things which are detrimental and abusive to ourselves, but we can be anywhere and in any place and engage in things which are productive. I think, I believe that this word urdhvaritas is not only that special technique which we are teaching here, but the overall approach to the science and art of yoga and the art of living outside, that this has to be a seamless process where yoga and life becomes one. The word yoga itself is union, isn't it? The union. What union? Union of the soul and the super soul? It's too big. The union of me within myself and with society. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we place a lot of importance to service to society, service to mankind, service to the whole world. And to bring this to the whole world, bring this knowledge to the whole world, bring the knowledge that yoga is a very balancing practice. Yeah, and I think this is something which I am striving towards. And yeah, any questions, Karina?
What you've described, these subtle practice also trains your awareness, isn't that? Your awareness of yourself, your awareness of how your body behaves, moves, your energy flow. And you can achieve that in just 30 days with those little practices. It's amazing.
You can have a glimpse of it.
A glimpse of it. Okay. Okay. After 30 days of practice, I start to see some of the benefits I'm working towards too. And that's, I find that's a short time. 30 days. When we're not talking hours and hours of practice each day, but just a few minutes, three times a day, to just raise that awareness and get the benefits. It's fantastic.
Yeah, Karina, I think one of the things that we have been conditioned to think is that that some benefits have to take place only after a long period of time, right? But you and I would also have felt that some benefits sometimes can be felt quite quickly over a short period of time. But for it to be sustained is another question.
Yeah.
So how do we sustain it? Again, after 30 days, we continue. There's a continuity. The continuity is very important, where that state becomes much more permanent. Otherwise, even for me, let's say I don't practice for maybe 10 days, mm-hmm. I feel that I'm not at my peak. Mm. So it kind of, there has to be a generator. Mm-hmm. So the generator is the actual practice. To say that perpetually at one point, let's say after so many years of practicing, you reach an orbit and perpetually you are rotating, I have not experienced that yet, and I have not seen it in many people who have not done sadhana. And even the senior yogis or my peers who have been practicing for maybe 80 years or 90 years, some of my friends who have been practicing who are now 90 plus, also have the same issue that they need to practice. This is the issue which sometimes doesn't make yoga popular. Even in my students and people who inquire about our courses, they say, oh, do I have to practice? I say, you have to practice. It is not like you, like how we have, things like you just take a pill and then you feel that you are in that. But people take a pill, they have a price to pay. After the pill drains off, you have a price to pay. Mm-hmm. And this price is not here in yoga. In yoga, even though we don't have any substances or pills to swallow, but we have something which we can generate from inside. Now, Karina, just 1 minute of a conversation that I had with a police officer in India day before yesterday. He was a superintendent of police, and he said, you know, this heroin, heroin. He said that his experience with this narcotics bureau was that they are so afraid of the heroin that they don't even touch it, because he said that the young man or woman who takes it, they take it, they feel so much of bliss and happiness and euphoria, and that is for a few hours, and when it drains off, it is like their whole body is burning in a furnace, and that is how the syndicates take over. They say that, and at that moment they can do anything. So you see how substances are. Yeah, of course, shortcut. But they lose their consciousness. They are not aware of the negativity of any of these artificial drugs and substances. Now, yoga gives you the same kind of high. It gives you the same kind of euphoria and all that. But it may not be so big at the moment, but it does give you the glimpses, and it keeps our children away from this damaging lifestyle. Mm. It keeps them away from substance abuse and then abusing themselves. And there's so many people have damaged themselves because they think in the name of freedom they can do anything. Then after that, they are broken. And I think these are things which yoga can teach. Yoga is not teaching, it doesn't preach. It doesn't say, oh, I am more moral or morality or things. No, we're not talking about that. I'm talking about protecting our body's health, our mind's health, our consciousness, and then not regretting what we have done in the past. Now, early intervention, early to yoga gives them, the children, the teenagers, an opportunity to feel happy, and then they feel that happiness is, I can feel it from inside. Hey, how come that I practice yoga, urdhvaretas or pranayama or meditation, I feel happy inside? And that is something new for me, because I was told that happiness is only from outside. But now, Karina, outside happiness has a limit, right? Today, you are happy with your friend. You're so happy. Then after 2 days, you may not be happy with the friend because he or she did something. You're happy with a brand new car. Oh, I'm so happy with this brand new car. And then after 2-3 months, somebody else shows another car. I think this guy is better, and I want to get rid of this. So outside is bound by the fluctuations. But is it because of that we want to stay away? No, we understand. This is what the world is, and I understand. Therefore, I place more importance in my training and be happy inside, so that this happiness can flow outside and people can depend on me for stability. That I don't have to depend on money in the pocket, I'm happy. No money, I'm sad. If good friends, I'm happy. I have no friends, I'm not happy. So these fluctuations reduce and I am steady, and therefore I can bring steadiness to the people around me. So this is a practical approach and purpose of yoga, and it has to be in that way. Now, I spoke about the asanas, I spoke about the breathing. I want to talk a little bit about the mind, because the urdhvaretas energy, when it goes, it does have a very strong, significant influence in the way the brain works and functions. Meditation, Karina, is not an art of stopping the mind. Mm-hmm. It's not an art of emptying the mind. It is not an art of not allowing the mind to think. The nature of the mind is to think, correct? Mm-hmm. That is how we have the mind. Mm-hmm. We want to think. We want to be creative. We want to be expressive. The art of meditation, as what I have understood and practiced and experienced, is an art of giving the mind. You close your eyes, you give the mind complete freedom to express itself.
Yeah.
You allow. You don't respond to it physically. What the thoughts are, you don't go and do this, do that, do that. you observe and witness, but you give it the ultimate freedom that society has not given you, the world has not given you, maybe parents, spouse, children, siblings, they have curtailed your freedom. But meditation is an opportunity to give yourself that freedom of thought, just letting go.
Yeah.
Let it explode in its creativity, and you just witness and you observe how powerful the mind is and how much of feelings and expressions it can express there, and you remain a witness.
Mm-hmm.
You remain a witness to all these expressions and explosions, or even maybe silence, whatnot. But we do not go and condition the mind to say that meditation is like this. Meditation is supposed to see lights. Meditation is supposed to be empty. Meditation is supposed to see some deity. No, we don't go and condition it. Just letting go. As we do this, as we allow, so much of pent-up emotion, so much of trauma, so much of feelings that has been suppressed, so much of things that maybe bad things or whatever that has been suppressed inside is allowed to release. But I am not reacting. I am learning to watch. How do I watch? I observe breath. If the thoughts are overwhelming, I observe the sensations in my body. I anchor it with the breath. I anchor it with the body. I observe. What do I feel? Do I feel a contraction in the abdomen when this thought comes? I observe that. Can I release it? If I feel the breathing is shorter when I have this kind of thought, which may be traumatic or somebody has abused me, then I observe the breath and I say, okay, cool. I release. I let go. I release. I let go.
Mm-hmm.
So in practice, the movements that we do, the breathing that we do, the meditation that we do is an opportunity for us to release from the traumatic experiences or from some kind of abusive experiences or some form of experiences where there was an attempt to subject me, to not allow me to explore myself. This is what yoga can bring about in anybody's life. The opportunity to be able to release, and one of the easiest way to approach this is to observe a secondary point. When I'm doing the asanas, I observe the breath. When I'm doing the breathing, I observe the body sensation. When I'm doing the meditation, observing the mind's movement, I observe the breath, I observe the body sensation, I observe the surrounding, how the temperature and all that. There's kind of a secondary movement there. I don't pay full attention to this because some of the thoughts could be overwhelming. Some may have had lots of trauma or some very difficult moments in their life where the thoughts could affect them tremendously at that moment. So they learn to kind of not suppress, but at that moment detach and observe something else which is happening in their body, and then divert a bit. And then observe, and then be a witness. So I believe that yoga is here for the broken person. For the person who has been damaged in life, who has been an unfortunate victim to circumstances and situations of life, where almost every one of us have been subject to that kind of thing, no matter whether they are very rich or they're very poor or they come from a spiritual or religious background, somewhere in school or in college, at home or in society or in public, some things happen where there is a slight trauma, some big trauma, and yoga can help us to release that. And this Urdhvaretas practice, not only the specialized practice, which is called Urdhvaretas, but the general practice of yoga in its entirety, the yoga practice of the physical yoga should be approached in a very gentle, soft, non-competitive, non-straining, non-injurious way. The art of breathing should be approached in a non-competitive, non-aggressive manner. And the art of meditation should be approached, and very important, because this is the most subtle entity or structure in our mind. The way we handle our mind has to be at the most gentle, loving, kind, and compassionate way. Same thing with the body. Kindness, compassion, and love. Exercise to yourself, to the way you bring the body, the way you breathe, the way you think, the way we consume food and water. Everything has to be structured in a way where there is lots of love, compassion, and kindness to ourselves. I would not allow myself to think in a way which is sad or negative or worrying, because that is not what this body is for. God, you know, the creator or the universe or nature has given this body to be protected, to be nurtured, to be loved. So why should I think anything negative and then poison my body? So I'm very conscious of this, to be aware, as you mentioned the word, to be aware.
Yeah.
To be aware of almost. Now, Karina, we are not looking at perfection. If we look for perfection, we are going to be disappointed.
Yeah.
To err is human, to forgive is divine. Right? So it is okay to make mistake. The only thing that is not okay is to keep on doing the mistake and saying that it's okay to make the mistake. Okay. No. So you kind of like the mistakes are there, but it is like reducing, you know, the degree of it is reducing over a period of time. Let's be fair. Let's give chances for everyone to reform slowly and steadily, but there has to be a degree of refinement. Yoga definitely has the tools to assist and to do this. Are there any questions? I've spoken too much.
Refuse to make better choices for yourself, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Let me ask if the participants have any questions. Wenn ihr Fragen habt, dürft ihr gerne den Chat benutzen. Ich helfe bei der Übersetzung, wenn ihr da Schwierigkeiten habt. Ansonsten dürft ihr gerne auch euch freischalten und eine Frage stellen, wenn ihr möchtet. Ich will euch nicht ausschließen davon. Traut euch ruhig. Ich helfe so gut ich kann.
So beautiful language. What language is that, Karina?
I spoke German to them.
Oh, a very beautiful language. I didn't know it. German is so wonderful.
Oh, by the way, I wanted to tell you, I lived at KL and I lived in Malaysia for a while, but not in KL. I visited several times. I lived up north in Penang.
Oh Penang. Wow,
yeah.
That's interesting. Don't know. When was that, Karina? When? What year was that?
2017, for 4 years.
For 2017 until 2021.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay, so we missed you here.
Absolutely.
And we are connecting when you are in Germany and I'm in KL, and for 4 years we didn't cross path, and maybe this is the timing. This is the right timing, I think.
Yeah.
Do your friends have any questions?
I don't see any in the chat.
Okay.
Not yet.
Not yet, never mind. So if they have any questions, you can stop me and I can, you know, attempt to answer their questions. And so coming back to the overall concept of yoga and the approach to yoga, one is that we need to kind of like make it very moderate. The approach to yoga, any of the practices need to be moderate, and especially with the breath and the mind, has to be structured in a very compassionate way and a non-aggressive way. Mm-hmm. The same with the body, that we have to start somewhere in a very soft and connecting it with the levels that we have, the level of flexibility or strength that we have. And it is okay to be not flexible. It is okay to be overweight. It is okay to have some injuries. It's all fine. We have to accept ourselves, right?
Mm-hmm.
And when I have accepted myself as I am right now, this is me, this is my mind, this is my breath, this is my body, these are my emotions, these are my past.
Mm-hmm.
I accept it.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, the reality is that I have to accept it. From this acceptance, I want to make some changes. I decide to make some changes. Then yoga can lead me to a very safe path of changes, the changes that I want to make. But these changes that I want to make is not what I want to impress society with. It's for me. It's for my own healing, the healing of my body, my emotions, my breath, my mind. And the way to do it is through very simple, small steps of self-understanding. That's the reason why this the big objective of yoga is called moksha. Moksha means self-realization. And then you have another word, which is liberation. And when you read about yoga, it talks about liberation. Mm-hmm. And then this word, self-realization, comes in. Which comes first? Mm-hmm. First, there must be self-realization, isn't it? So this self-realization. And what is this self? This self is the totality. Yeah. Mind, body, breath. This totality is self. I attempt to understand in a soft way. I'm not going to judge myself, but in a soft way, I'm going to keep improving the way I feel. I keep improving. So this self-realization eventually allows me to have glimpses of liberation, moksha. The moment I look there after the practice and feeling connected with my higher self, I feel, oh, such a beautiful world. This is a beautiful world which I didn't understand. Now I understand. And then I also understand there is an infinite feeling inside me. And it's a glimpse. Will I say at that moment, Karina, will I say, oh, Karina, I have attained enlightenment? If I say that, then I have not had a glimpse of the reality. It's an illusion. Because when I have a glimpse of the infinite, I would tell myself, oh my, there's so much more to know. Because it's infinite, so much more to know, and therefore, I am eager to continue the journey. If I say, I've attained moksha, satori, emancipation, self-realization, I'm enlightened, this person, I would avoid. If I say this, Karina, please avoid me. If I say, I am enlightened, I am liberated, I have attained the highest level, please switch off this and don't ever come and see me again because I have not experienced anything. It's just kind of a speculation. To say that I don't know anything at the glimpse of the infinite shows that we have arrived at the doorsteps of yoga.
Thank you.
We have arrived at the most beautiful juncture in our life, where there is that intermediary, that place where I am seeing a glimpse of the self. The mind is seeing a glimpse of the infinite within me. And then we realize that all the scriptures, all the founders of religion, spirituality, that they say that the truth is inside. Okay. That the reality is inside. And it cannot be just words and readings. It has to be something that you have a glimpse of. I think then we have arrived, that we have arrived at that point in our practice where we don't need motivation, that we don't need someone to tell us to practice, and we just want to touch base with that. You know that the tools of practice are the ones that are giving us the glimpse of that infinite and the beautiful inner nature that we have. And will we be healthy after that? Now, for sure, Karina, what is the greatest natural medicine that can almost keep you perpetually happy? Healthy. It's happiness, right?
Yeah.
Happiness is that natural medicine that can almost heal everything psychologically, emotionally, physically. Keep yourself happy and healthy, and in a perpetual state of of structured happiness, consciously attempting to do that. And all that feel-good hormones and the endorphins, oxytocin, all that which science speaks about as being available for us can be stimulated during the Urdhvaraitas practice, during the asana practice, during the pranayama practice and the meditation practice. Now, for us to feel that this feel-good hormones is going to be saturated in the body, let me ask a question here.
Oh, Mani, we need to come to the end of the session.
Oh, okay.
Because we have time issues otherwise. Thank you so much for coming and for everything you shared with us and for the wealth of information you've been giving us. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you so much and wish everybody the best always. Thank you and namaskar.
Thank you so much. Until next time.
Yes, thank you.